This has obviously been a hugely disappointing season overall for the Giants, and Giants chairman Greg Johnson sat down with Andy Baggerly to discuss the future of this team and talked about how they were willing to do whatever it took to put together a highly competitive team moving forward. So we'll get into what he said and what it means next.
You are Locked On Giants, your daily San Francisco Giants podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. My name is Ben Caspick, and on the show we provide daily episodes Monday through Friday talking about the San Francisco Giants in a way that's data-driven and rational, but also simple, passionate, and accessible to all. I'm a former contributor for the baseball statistics and analysis websites Beyond the Box Score and Rotographs. I've been podcasting about the Giants since 2015, and I'm a lifelong fan. Thank you for making Locked On Giants your first listen every day. We're free and available wherever you get podcasts. And coming up on today's show, we're going to discuss this piece in The Athletic by Andy Baggerly with quotes from Giants chairman Greg Johnson as well as Farhan Zaidi. And Johnson also talked about, you know, evaluating the job that Farhan Zaidi has done, not just this year, but overall in what is now almost four full years as president of baseball operations. But what jumped off the page to me was when Johnson was talking about this season and then projecting forward, you know, the payroll and just the lack of the team being competitive this year. And what did he have to say about that? And what he said, and this is, again, all from Andy Baggerly in this piece in The Athletic, came out, I think, yesterday. Johnson said, quote, "The baseball needs, as far as what we need to do to put a very competitive team on the field, we're willing to do that. If it was $175 million or $180 million or higher than that, we're willing to do that. There's going to be years when you have three or four prospects coming up ready to roll, and that may put some relief on payroll. Or you have years when you'll have to fill some spots and pay extra. That's the flexible approach that we're taking. There's no fixed line. Our goal, as we've stated, is always to try to break even as best we can as an organization. It's been a tough few years, like it has been for a lot of organizations, but we'll do whatever it takes to put a competitive team on that field." End quote. And so there's a lot to unpack here. The number one thing he said is that he said multiple times, very competitive team. And this year has not been a very competitive team. And so they're not okay with that. It's great to kind of see from Johnson to Zaidi to Kapler, like everybody's just saying this is not acceptable. And when you keep saying that, it does put the burden onto you that you must remedy it, or you're showing everybody that you're doing an unacceptable job. And so for one season this happening, I think it's all right. You're not going to tear the whole structure down and start over simply because this happened one year. But if it starts to happen again, if it happens next year, I think then there's serious questions about the direction of the team and the front office's performance. So the next thing that stood out is these payroll numbers. He's talking actual numbers here, which is good. It's good that Baggerly and others in the media have started to focus more on the actual physical, hard, concrete numbers of the payroll. It's good that we have more access to this than we used to, or at least it's easier to access than it used to be. You can pull up fangraphs.com, click on the roster resource tab, and see all the contracts and what the payroll is and what it is next year, what it is the year after that, in a lot of detail as well, including all the club options, player options, all that kind of stuff. And so when he says 175, 180, first of all, it's somewhat not ideal to me when he's talking about these numbers as if they're giant numbers. But the Dodgers and the Mets are closer to $300 million than they are to $200 million. And these numbers, 175, 180, you're coming in below $200 million even with these hypotheticals. But the last several years, the Giants have been around 160. And so the fact that he's saying 175, 180, we speculated that maybe there was, because like he's saying, there's no, they're not saying this is the absolute limit, but he is saying they try to break even. And he said that before. And we've talked about it a couple of times when he said it. And then this year we've revisited that. Cobert Gobert in a mailbag question asked about it. And we revisited it just a few weeks ago. But we don't know exactly what they're taking in. So we don't know what breaking even means and what they need to spend on payroll. But he also mentioned that the last few years have been tough. And what he's referring to is the COVID-19 pandemic. Of course, in 2020, there were no fans in the stands, and it was a partial season. And so a lot of losses from 2020. And then the last couple of years, attendance hasn't been great either. But you could also say you're not putting together a super compelling product that is having fans want to come out and see the team. I think hopefully they recognize that this fan base probably is willing to come back out if there's a super compelling team. And I think wins don't necessarily mean the team is super compelling, because 107 wins last year, it still wasn't necessarily a team that just would drive people to the ballpark because of the sheer entertainment value. They won a lot, which is great. And to me, winning is the most important thing, but also it's important to have some marketability to your team. But anyway, he says if it was 175 or 180 or higher than that, we're willing to do that. And so that sets the stage for next year's payroll. You can't say this and then put together a team that comes in with a payroll below these numbers and then doesn't do well, because then we can look back at what he said here and say, why did you not do what you said you were going to do? You spent less than you said you were willing to spend to make a competitive team, and you don't have a competitive team. So what this does is it puts pressure on them to make additions to that payroll. And we discussed yesterday what that would look like in order to bring the payroll up to these numbers. And so coming up in just a minute, we're going to revisit that in a little bit more detail. I've drawn out some specific salary predictions for some marquee free agents and taken a look at where it would put the Giants from a payroll perspective next year. And so it kind of gives us a clue as to what type of players they could be in the market for. Because even if it's just Aaron Judge, I don't think that's enough. You got to do more than that. So what would it take to get to 175, 180 million plus? So all of that in just a second. But first, BetOnline.net is the number one source for all your pro and college football betting needs and sports info this season. Find all the latest football league developments, game matchups, news, and podcasts, including this year's opening week games, which are, of course, in the rearview mirror. But how about the second week of the football season coming up tonight is the first game of week two. BetOnline is also your continued source for all your sporting wagering information, including live betting, esports, and scores. The fastest and easiest way to check in on all your favorite sports and events, including MLB, MMA, boxing, and golf. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in action. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, as promised, we're going to take a closer look at some of what we were discussing yesterday when we looked at what is the payroll looking like going into 2023? What we figured when we accounted for guaranteed contracts plus arbitration raises was that the Giants have about $103 million going to about 22, 23 players. So that doesn't mean they're locked in on those players. These were my predictions on a lot of guys. Like, I'm making some decisions about who to non-tender, who to tender contracts to, etc. But basically, that does not include Carlos Rodon, and it does include taking the buyout on Evan Longoria as opposed to picking up the option. So if Carlos Rodon were to opt in, you can add $22.5 million to that number and add a player. So that would be $125.5 million going to 24 players. This does not mean they're locked into 24 players at all. They have a lot of flexibility here. I'm just making rough estimates. And I'd call it more like 22 players, because I think they're going to want to at least turn over four players. But I've also included just, you know, league minimum bullpen guys. They have a lot of guys who will be in that category, and they don't have to commit to them all. But I'm just saying they might commit to a few. And so it's not really moving the needle, because these league minimum salaries are only, you know, less than $1 million. So say you don't have one of those guys on your roster, it clears you a roster spot and it saves you less than $1 million. So it doesn't really move the needle. But the guys who do move the needle are the guys on, you know, multi-year guaranteed contracts, or just one more year, but, you know, $10+ million going to 2023. So anyway, as I've said repeatedly, I think that they need to either bring back Carlos Rodon or replace Carlos Rodon, like bring in a Jacob deGrom or someone like that, someone with upside to be a front of the rotation type of arm. And if it is Rodon, I've kind of estimated that he will get around the $22.5 million he's owed if he were to opt in. He's very almost certain to opt out, but it would be $22.5 million times a number of years, 4 or 5 years, something in that vicinity. So like I just mentioned, if you add that to the payroll, you're at $125.5 million. So then I've said, okay, what if you then add Trey Turner? What is Trey Turner going to get in the open market? Well, it's not entirely clear, but somewhere around $30 million. Could it be more than that? I suppose that it could. But something like 8 years, $30 million per year, when I think about it roughly, I don't know. I mean, he could be a guy who ends up getting 9 or 10 years. I'm not entirely sure what that market is going to look like, but I think estimating about $30 million a year is not too far out of the realm of possibility there. And so if you add Rodon and you add Trey Turner and you look at that initial $103-ish million, you're already at $155.5 million. So Greg Johnson said 175, 180 or higher than that. He didn't say how much higher than that. He did say they try to break even. But even if we're at 175 million, that still gives you another $20 million to spend on next year's team, in addition to re-signing Carlos Rodon and signing Trey Turner. So this should, in some ways, get you excited, because it goes to show you, as I've said repeatedly, just because they haven't been signing these marquee players doesn't mean that they couldn't. Because when we talk about financial flexibility, it means the ability to kind of reshape your roster through signings. And you can't, if you have this number, like he's saying, 175, 180 million, and you've already committed it to guys prior to the offseason coming, that's called not having financial flexibility. But where the Giants are so flexible is that even when we factor in arbitration raises and guys becoming arbitration eligible for the first time, like Logan Webb, we're still only at about 103 million. So then you've got this room where you can make additions and still come in below where you're trying to come in terms of payroll. And so, yeah, only at $155 million there. So you could add a $20 million a year player like Brandon Nimmo, and that brings us to $175.5 million. So the question I have when I look at this is bringing back Rodon and signing Trey Turner and Brandon Nimmo enough for this Giants team? It's certainly not a bad place to start. And if that was, you know, if those were the big moves of the offseason, I don't think I would complain very much. You've brought in a superstar talent in Trey Turner, and Brandon Nimmo is very good in his own right. And Nimmo's an outfielder, Turner, shortstop, second base, mostly shortstop in his career. He's played a little bit of outfield much earlier in his career. But I don't know. Say you want to make it, though, let's experiment with some other names. Say you make it DeGrom instead of Rodon. Well, you're probably doubling the average annual value, and it's going to probably be over a shorter term. Max Scherzer's getting like $43 million a year over 3 years, and I think that DeGrom will probably use that as a baseline and probably try to do just a little bit better. And so could he get $45 million a year over 2 or 3 years? I think that he probably could. So if you take $45 million a year and add it to the $103 million, not necessarily committed to next year's team, but in according to my predictions that are very preliminary, if you take the 103, add 45, you're at 148. And then say you try to add Trey Turner as well, suddenly you're already at $178 million. So I don't know, the upside of signing a DeGrom as opposed to a Rodon is that you don't have to commit as many years. Maybe it's 2 years, $90 million, and it's like, okay, even if he gets hurt The deal is over in 2 years. But for Rodon, if it's a five-year deal, there's just a lot of risk associated with that. And they've tended to prefer shorter-term deals at more money versus longer-term deals kind of spread out. So I don't know. Take it for what you will. I think you might get similar production in year one and maybe year two of the deal with Rodon and DeGrom. And if $180-ish million is some kind of limit for them, then based on looking at this, then I would probably say that Rodon makes more sense because it's half the value in a given year, but over a longer term. So say you want Aaron Judge as opposed to Trey Turner. It's probably going to be, I don't know, $35, $36 million a year. A little bit of a shorter term, I would imagine. Maybe not. I mean, Judge is 31 next year and Turner is 30 next year. And we calculate it, the age 30 season, age 31 season is how old are they? Is it June 1st or July 1st? It's one of those dates. How old are they on that date? I think it's July 1st. But say it's Judge and Rodon, and Judge at 36 million, Rodon at 22 and a half. Then those two, Rodon, Judge, and the other guys already coming back, brings you to about $161.5 million. So you've still got money to spend in that case. So what's apparent by looking at this is that they have the ability to bring back Rodon and sign one of the top two free agents that are out there. And whether it's Judge or Turner or even Xander Bogaerts, it might be a little bit cheaper. Maybe Turner is $33 million a year and maybe Bogaerts is 30 or 28. These are in the ballpark, right? I'm not like way off with these numbers necessarily. I mean, who knows? You never know what's going to happen, but they could do this and still be in under these numbers that Greg Johnson keeps referred to in this conversation he had with Andy Baggerly. So then it would allow you to bring in a Nimmo, or there are other guys. I mean, there's a lot of other free agents out there. These are just the ones that stood out to me as the impact talents. There's also Carlos Correa, who has an opt-out of 2 years, $70.2 million, I believe, is the opt-out. I'm not seeing it as I... Yeah, 2 years, $70.2 million he can opt out of. And there's Xander Bogaerts, 3 years, $60 million that he can opt out of. But suffice it to say, they have options, and that is good to see. So coming up in just a minute, Johnson didn't stop there. He talked about the job that Farhan Zaidi has done and whether or not they kind of stand behind him moving forward. So you're not going to want to miss what he said, and we'll get to it in just a minute. But first, all right, as promised, more from Greg Johnson, courtesy of Andy Baggerly in this article in The Athletic. Johnson said the following, quote, "We are fully behind Farhan and Gabe and the coaching staff. We recognize that you have a team that did get older and that presents some challenges and a farm system that I would say hasn't progressed as quickly as we'd like to see. There's been some injuries to key people and COVID has set back the timeline on development in some cases. But the general direction, the tone, the work ethic, the dedication that these guys put in every day and the morale we see, even in a tough year, we're very much committed to Farhan and his team." So then Baggerly interjects in the article by saying so much that he envisions Zaidi being his head of baseball operations beyond next year. And Johnson said, "Well, yes, I would. Yes." And so it's not clear if Farhan Zaidi has been extended, because he initially was signed to a 5-year contract. And as Baggerly points out, and this is something I knew as well, a lot of times these deals don't get reported. If there's an extension to your president of baseball operations, we don't often hear about it. And eventually we'll hear about it. If Farhan Zaidi, next year is year 5, and if he returns, we'll be like, okay, well, clearly they extended his contract. And so to me, I'm just going to give kind of my analysis of this. As I said in the open, I think that I think it would be foolish to react to what we've seen this year and say, okay, yeah, get rid of this group. They've put in a ton of work over the last 4 years, and you could argue that it hasn't yielded ultimately the best of results, given that mostly it's just that this year was disappointing. But if you kind of combine last year and this year, you get, would you rather have 2 years? I think Grant Brisby asked this question, and I had been wondering it myself at the time. Would you rather have a 107-win season followed by what's hopefully going to be around a 500 season? Hopefully it's not worse than that, is what I mean. Could be worse, could be around 500. Would you rather have a 107-win season and a season in which you're around 500, or would you rather have two 90-win seasons? And for me, I take the consistency and the 90-win seasons. But what Farhan Zaidi said, and I totally agree, is that this point in year four, they expect that they're a team that's going to be making the playoffs each and every year. And that's what I would have said in the beginning. I would have said coming into this year, and I'm saying now, they should be not a team that is going to finish maybe below 500 and miss the playoffs, given how many years they've had to kind of get this thing going. And I look at teams like the Cardinals and the Yankees, who haven't had losing seasons for a long time. I think it's like 30-something years for the Yankees and 15 years for the Cardinals. And for the Giants to just go back to having a losing season would be a big disappointment in a lot of different ways. But something I just want to point out that I think is unfair is when I see this said or talked about or whatever, that let's say the Giants do have a losing season this year, and then it's going to be said repeatedly that in 3 of the 4 years under Farhan Zaidi, they've had losing seasons, or that he's only had one winning season. I think that that's disingenuous a little bit. It is just factual, okay? I'll admit, of course, it is just a fact if they are below 500 this year. But the reason I find it to be kind of a disingenuous perspective is that in year one, nobody should have expected them to be above 500. He inherited a very bad roster situation, and it was a given that they were going to be below 500. And in fact, in year two, it was not a normal year, but even if it was a full normal year, I think it would have been a little bit foolish to expect that that quickly they would have turned it into an above 500 team. I think people expected that at least in the first 2 years, you're probably going to get below 500 results, which ultimately they did in 2020. But A, it was not a normal year, so we don't know what would have happened over 162. I actually thought they were going to be, I don't remember what I predicted their record was going to be that year, but what they did was they started out 8-16 in this 60-game season. They ended up 29-31, but they were above 500 going into that last weekend series against the Padres, and they lost 3 out of 4. So they couldn't have been closer to not being below 500. One more win and they would have been 500 on the nose. Two more wins and they're above 500. So when you look at that year, expectations should have been low, and they exceeded expectations that year. So I'm not really knocking against this front office the first 2 years. In fact, year two was a success because they really hit, and the new coaching staff clearly made an impact, is what it seemed. And sure enough, that carried over into 2021 when they continued to really hit and they won 107 games. And so last year was not just a above 500 year, it was a historical year. They've never had more wins in their over a century long franchise history. Never. And so the fact that this year might be around 500, it's just a disingenuous argument to me to use that against them. It'll just be factual, but if you use it with like anger and rage, it's just not fair, because years one and two should have been expected to be below 500 anyway. Year three was magical and historic, and year four is, so it's really just one disappointing year, in my opinion, is what this is looking like. And so I do believe it would be a big overreaction to say, okay, next front office, this isn't working. I agree with what Johnson said. The direction, the energy, the commitment is there. They just need to supplement this roster by making some signings in the offseason, and they seem motivated to do it. And then, like he mentioned, with some years you're going to have 3 or 4 prospects ready to go, and that can give you some payroll relief. I don't love him talking about needing payroll relief, but at the same time, he's right. If you have Kyle Harrison and Marco Luciano and others show up and just be really good, then all of a sudden, you're not forced to go out there and make these big splashes in the offseason, because you're just going to have a good team that's funneling in good talent. And those, you know, and then maybe you can consider extending those guys, and that ends up often being to team-friendly deals, like they got with Buster Posey like they got with others. You know, when you have homegrown talent, you're able to extend them before they reach the open market, and those are often below market deals. So that's kind of what he's referring to. And of course, you don't owe anybody more than the league minimum salary for their first 3 years of service time. So hey, that's just the way the game works. Anyway, that is all the time we have for today. Thanks again for making Locked On Giants your first listen today. Now make your second listen the Locked On MLB podcast. MLB expert Paul Francis Sullivan brings humor, passion, and unique perspective on every team and the biggest stories around the league. Follow the number one daily league-wide podcast, Locked On MLB, on the Odyssey app, YouTube, and wherever you get podcasts. Once again, my name is Ben Kaspick. Check me out on Twitter, at Ben Kaspick, K-A-S-P-I-C-K. If you like this show, please consider rating it or leaving a review. Helps me out a lot, so thanks in advance, and thank you to everyone who's done so already. Coming up tomorrow, more mailbag questions, so look out on Twitter for the prompt. It's going to be a fun one. Thanks again for listening. You are now Locked On Giants.